Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Exposition, a show about performers and artists in the Southeast Ohio region. And I'm Mike Thompson. I'm here with Valerie Collins.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good.
And you do what when you're not here?
I really don't know. I'm trying to find myself. No, my daughter and I, Kelsey, and I have our managers at the Artisan Shop and Studio downtown, and it's across from the city park in Galapagos. And this time of year, we have a lot going on. Please check out our pages, the Artisan Shop and Studio page and the Gallia County Artisan Market page, and our website to see what upcoming holiday events we have, and wonderful shopping experience. All of the amazing things that our artisans make, one of a kind. Please come in and visit our shop sometime.
Yeah, support your local artists.
Yes, thank you so much.
They're not just starving.
Yes, starving artists, yes.
Okay, so we have an artist and performer here, but we're going to look at the artistic part. Our craftsmanship, Dr. Chris Penny, who is associate professor of music here at the University of Rio Grande, and he also has his own thing at home, Acorn House Workshop, and he has a website, acornhouseworkshop.com.
All one word.
All one word.
Right. And he builds wood products, and one of those things is a musical instrument.
In front of us, right here.
Right.
Right here.
So welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Thanks for coming.
Sure.
We appreciate it.
So maybe you can tell a little bit about yourself, like where you're from and how this all got started.
Well, I grew up in Massachusetts, Fall River, and started in music probably in the fourth grade. I'd been around music, exposed to music in the house because my dad was always playing music of some sorts and a lot of variety of sorts, jazz, classical, modern classical, down to the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And so fourth grade, they came around and said, okay, here's some instruments. Would anybody like to sign up to learn how to play them?
Yeah.
And so I signed up for trumpet lessons and started playing that. Seemed to take to it fairly well.
And the parents were okay with all the screeching and honking?
Yeah. Well, actually, I made some sounds.
Mike!
Some okay sounds right from the beginning.
That's why I couldn't go into band. They didn't want to hear it.
Oh,
and then after 2 years of lessons through the school, then I went with a private teacher and then just built up my skills. And so when I graduated, decided that I was going to go into music, and so started at DePaul University, working in Bachelor of Music in Trumpet Performance and Composition. I got involved with composition, finished that degree, and then went on to OSU for Master's and Doctorate in Composition.
Now, composition is not easy. You know, you think, I can write a song. All you got to do is string some notes together, but there's a whole science behind all that.
Well, there's a science and an art. Now, granted, of course, the stuff that I was writing was more symphonies and sonatas and concertos. And one of the challenges, especially in what was then the 20th century, way back when,
back before the turn of the century,
was that music was so varied. There wasn't any one language. In the 19th century, there was one language that everybody spoke. So it was the Romantic period. Everybody spoke the same language, no matter what part of the world you were in. 20th century, everybody said, no, I want to do it this way. No, I want to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the challenges of being a composer is finding your own voice and creating things that are not sounding like anybody else.
Right. You've got to be unique to stand out from the crowd.
And so like any other art form, basically you take all the elements that you're hearing, take a little bit of that, a little bit of that, oh, I like some of that, I like some of that, pour it together, and out it comes you. And that happens the same way with woodworking. and with instrument building. You're looking at various styles, various pieces, and saying, okay, I like that. I like the way the legs look on that. I like the way the top looks on that. I like this and that. And then you start to amalgamate your own style.
Hmm.
And then it's a signature look.
Yeah.
It's a signature sound.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's a Chris Kenny. Mm-hmm. That's what we call it.
So when did you get into building wood stuff?
Well, I'd always been interested watching the PBS shows, This Old House and New Yankee Workshop, and then the DIY when that came around.
Mm. You like the Woodwright Shop?
Woodwright Shop, definitely.
Yeah, he's old school.
Definitely old school, but I've actually met him at a couple of woodworking conferences.
Cool. Oh,
and
good.
He's not just old school just to be folksy. He's old school because he's worried about what happens when we run out of oil, when we run out of gas, when we run out of electricity. We're going to need those skills to be able to make stuff without any electricity.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really preaching. He's not just doing it just to be folksy.
Yeah.
But anyway, as a student and living in apartments, never really had the opportunity to do anything until I bought my house. It had a one-car garage outbuilding in addition to the garages attached to the house, so I could set up a workshop there. It was wired, and I added some more wiring, got the tools, started building stuff for the house, build a dining room table, just somewhat easy stuff, and then building my skills. And then eventually married those skills, woodworking skills, with music, and start building instruments.
So what did you start with?
I think the first thing was some built-in cabinets for the living room. And
was
that
just
that sort of
oak
plywood and putting a face on it, and
yeah.
But getting an oak top so it fits on a 20-foot gap. And then building a dining table out of oak,
mm-hmm.
some walnut.
Okay. I think we've got some pictures.
Yep. So this first piece is one of my earliest pieces. It's got a spalted sycamore top, and so the spalting is where fungus gets in and creates all those lovely lines.
Now,
and
the fungus all the way through the wood, or just on the outside?
It's all the way through.
Huh.
Do you have to do anything special to
it's
keep
pretty
it
much,
from crawling?
For the most part, it's all dead. You do get some areas of the wood which are a little bit punky, a little bit soft.
Okay.
And those you can, like, add cyanoacrylate to harden it up.
Okay.
And so I put that on top of a cherry base. So it's sort of arts and crafts meets shaker style
mm-hmm.
furniture. So very simple, very basic, but
beautiful.
A little bit elegant.
And you did the little
little apple box on top with just the scrap of wood that I had.
So you keep your apples in there?
No. They'd have to be, well, I'd have to use crab apples.
Okay.
Teeny, teeny, teeny.
And so from that start, very derivative, get into my old. In my style, which is much more unique, drawing on some of the work of George Nakashima, the Japanese-American woodworker who used live edge slabs for his tops, I found this beautiful piece of English witch elm burl for the top, but it had an odd shape. And so I had to design around the odd shape of the top rather than just cutting it into a rectangle, which would lose a lot of really gorgeous wood.
Mm-hmm.
The edges is what makes that.
The edges and just all of the burl inside of it. And burls are sort of little growths, little branchlets that never emerged.
Oh.
And there's all sorts of patterns throughout that.
Oh.
And so put some red elm and have those lovely leg curls. And if you notice, three are coming through, but one doesn't go through the top. So it gives it a nice asymmetrical
mm-hmm.
element to it. And then with a floating drawer in the middle there.
So is this still in your house?
It's still in my house, and it's going to stay there.
So you can't pry it out of your...
It would cost a lot of money to buy it
but
from me.
But you could make somebody
I could make somebody
one.
Someone
they see this
similar.
I think I need that.
I could make something similar, yes.
Yes.
What would be the cost of something like
that? Depending upon the wood, it'd probably be around $1,000+.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's why I kind of figured to the scalp. Looks like a lot of work and some odd...
Yeah, anytime you start working with curves in furniture, it takes a lot more time to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Straight, boxy, rectangular, that's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Curves are hard. And so in addition, I've also made some smaller stuff just when you're looking for Christmas gifts and trying to think, okay, what am I going to get Aunt Jane this year?
Yeah.
And so these are some salt boxes. I always like contrasting wood, so I have both cherry and maple combined to give it a nice effect with a pivot so you can move the top aside, grab some salt, throw it in the pot, move the top back, and it's ready for the next one.
A lot of people use salt boxes?
Yeah.
More and more in fine cooking.
Okay.
Because they're not just using table salt out of a shaker, they're using kosher salt flakes, which work better, they attach themselves to food better, they dissolve better.
Yeah, I'm sure that makes my mac and cheese a little better.
They could. And this next piece is a jewelry box that I made for a customer that I was building the guitar for. And he had an anniversary coming up, and so he wanted to get something for his wife, and so he asked me to build a jewelry box in the meantime, and took some of the wood that I was using for his guitar, that's the madrone burl on top, the redwood, and some of the curly maple that was going into the neck.
And the curly maple is the lighter wood.
The lighter wood, right, with all those sort of wavy elements through it. And designed this jewelry box for him. And when we open it up, we can see that it has a compartment up at the top with lots of boxes for individual pieces. Lift that out, and there's another divided compartment underneath.
And I guess that top is joined in the center?
The very center of that is actually floating. Because one of the things you always have to be aware of with wood is wood movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at any door panels, you never want to glue the center of a door panel in.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be able to move a little bit
right
in the grooves. So that way, as the seasons change, it doesn't start cracking. Now, my shop is an unheated one. It's a one-car garage. There's no heat in it. It's got open vents, so it gets very cold in the winter.
So this is seasonal work.
So this is a little bit seasonal, and so one winter I decided, okay, I think I'm going to build myself a guitar amplifier. And so they have kits, or you can do it individually. So I started with a kit that came from England, built the amplifier part of it. It worked, but it needed a house.
Mm-hmm.
So then I grew upon the woodworking when it warmed up and built the cabinet for the amplifier.
I'm sure this is tube amps, right?
All tube amps. I do not do solid state.
I figure.
Does it matter what kind of wood, then, you use for the amplifier as opposed to...
For the cabinet, it can. You want a fairly lively wood. Now, for the amplifier head, it doesn't matter as much. For where the speaker goes into, there it is important what wood you work, what wood you use. That's why when you hear cabinets that are made of particle board, they sound dead and dull because the particle board just absorbs, doesn't vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get this old growth pine that's been aged for 50 years, and that cabinet, that speaker is just alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why a lot of the vintage amplifiers, speakers going back from the 50s, from the early days, are so coveted because they were made of this pine that is so aged that it just sparkles.
Hmm. Yeah, I know a tube amp sounds nice and warm. And
yeah, it just has more variation. It, a solid-state amp, it does one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It may do it well, but that's all it does.
Right. Wow.
Tube amp, the way you play will change the way it sounds.
Hmm.
But just from the way you hold your pick can change the sound.
Oh.
Very responsive. Now, in addition to guitars, both solid-body electric guitars and acoustic guitars, since I tend to be building on commission, somebody will ask me to build them a specific instrument. Sometimes they ask me to build something that I've never built before.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the case where a friend asked me to build her a mandolin. Now, a mandolin is sort of the next level up from an acoustic guitar because you're not just joining thin, flat pieces together. You're carving the top into an arch, both on the outer and the inside.
Right, so you don't bend that.
No.
You actually make it round.
That you carve it. Break scrap by scrap, shaving by shaving, until you get just the right shape.
That's not by sanding. That's more with
a
plane?
It is done with a plane and scraper.
Like gouges or something?
Some gouges for the rough work. So here you can see, after I finish the mandolin, the next year somebody else asked me for a mandola, which is the next size up. So this is the mandola soundboard, where you can see I've roughed out some of the wood, got rid of it with a router, but then I use that little brass plane there, take shaving by shaving until I get the just the right contour.
Oh, that's the thing on the lower left.
That's the thing on the lower left. So
okay.
that's an instrument maker's plane.
Hmm.
So originally they were used for violin making, but of course they, when they started carving mandolins and mandolas back in the turn of the century, that was adapted to it.
So how long would you have in carving
one
piece of that?
It takes a long time because
on?
First there's just smoothing out, in this case, the terraces from the router.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to get just the right shape, and then you have to carve the insides as well so that you get just the right thickness, and it's not the same thickness all the way through. The thickness
then
varies.
Then not to be as thick on different places?
Yes, because this the top is the soundboard, so it needs to vibrate a certain way. And so it has to be a little bit thicker at the top. As it goes down to the edges, it gets thinner and thinner and thinner. That's your speaker cone.
Wow. Okay. Didn't realize. I figured it was the same all the way through.
No, that would be too easy.
Yeah.
How did you learn this?
I learned it from books. After all, I'm an academic,
so
I can learn stuff from books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nowadays, of course, you have YouTube and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is just doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So is the front and the back or the same thickness, or is the back the same?
The back is pretty much the same way.
It's the same way, thinner on the edges?
Yep, thinner on the edges.
Huh.
And so here you can see the inside. After you finish all the carving and getting that smoothed out, then you have to fit the braces to match what you've just carved.
Mm.
So that it's...
Oh, right.
So that it's a solid glue joint.
Right, that's the X part there.
Yep.
And then you take two pieces of wood around the outside?
There are two pieces on the outside that are joined with the that kerfing. That's the grooved wood that will wrap it around and gives just a little bit more glue area to attach the top and the back to the sides.
Okay.
And, of course, carving the neck is another. I like carving the neck. It's a fun thing because it's very immediate because you can feel as you're going along that that feels good, no, it needs a little bit over here.
Oh.
One so you don't use a pattern, you just kind of do it by feel?
Mostly by feel.
Cool.
I mean, one of the things about carving the top and the back is that you don't know how good a job you've done until the instrument is completely finished and you've got the strings on and you strum it for the first time. So you don't know if you've done a good job until you've finished.
Hmm.
Whereas at least with the neck, you get an instant feedback.
Oh, right.
By how it feels.
Oh.
Now, would you do like a child's instrument, a woman or a man, that would be different sizes?
People have requested different sizes. I built an acoustic guitar for a gentleman who had very big hands.
Mm-hmm.
So he requested a wider, thicker neck than I could ever play. In fact, when I was trying to just test it as I was finishing it up, it was very hurting my hands to play it.
Oh, my goodness. Because
it was just too big. For him, it just felt finally comfortable.
Right.
Because he'd always been dealing with very thin necks,
mm-hmm.
which are normal size to us humans.
Right. This was a Sasquatch.
Yeah.
Big guy.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of, is there a different wood to use on a neck?
They're usually maple or mahogany are traditional. And for a mandolin and mandola family, then it's all maple.
Okay.
This has a walnut stripe in the walnut insert in the middle, so it's a sandwich,
hmm.
which provides a little bit more stability, I feel.
Right.
That way, if one piece wants to turn that way, it's counteracted by the piece on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so here's the finished instrument. Now, I normally don't do stains. I like to bask in the natural glow of the natural wood, but he wanted a stain, that dark amber. So on the spruce, it's okay, but when you look at the backside, you can really see one of the reasons why people like stains on guitars is with that curly maple on the back. And it brings out that figure in the maple back and side.
Now, what do you finish it with? Is it like rubbed oil or is it a varnish?
I finish it with an oil varnish. There's lots of ways to finish. There's nitrocellulose lacquer, which is the traditional finish from the 20th century.
Hmm.
But more and more people are moving away from that as far as the hand builders because it's very toxic.
And so
there are all sorts of rules, especially in California, on being just for the big companies being able to use that. They have to have a lot of control areas, and so it's a little bit more difficult to work with. Whereas with an oil varnish, I can do it in the guest bedroom.
Right. Just like the car painters are going more towards water-based.
Right.
Just because of the
you don't need a respirator.
Gas to put it off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've sprayed urethane before, and you need a really good...
Exactly.
You could die from that.
Oh, God. Don't want to
could you
that.
Bring up your guitar and maybe talk about the different pieces and maybe what they should be made with or
okay,
design
so
features?
Any acoustic guitar has a lot of different parts to it, and each part demands a certain type of wood. So the soundboard needs to be a softwood. Typically, it's going to be a spruce, either Sitka spruce, Adirondack spruce, European spruce. So this is a Sitka spruce, also a Bearclaw Sitka spruce. So it has all these markings that are just inherent in the wood that looks like a bear had swiped it.
Mm.
And so those are less common. So it's a little bit stiffer of a top.
Mm.
Then, of course, ebony fingerboard, ebony bridge, very traditional.
And that's wood or is that
That's wood.
Okay.
That's all wood. And for here, I used a myrtle back and sides, which is, I love the figure of the myrtle and the color of the myrtle. And it's not a traditional wood, but it's being used more and more as people are looking for more domestic wood choices rather than going to Brazilian rosewood, which you can't get anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get it because it's been stockpiled, it's $1,000 just for the back piece.
Wow.
Just for that one piece of wood and the side pieces.
Oh. Now you're talking to the guy in the black market.
And then you can't import it outside of the U.S. because of CITES,
because of
their regulations.
Mm-hmm.
This is if you could just see it in person, it's glowing.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I like an uncolored wood, an unstained wood, is that as you move it, you can see a chatoyance that it changes its color depending upon the angle that you're looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like one of those...
It's sort of like pearly, if
mm-hmm.
you want to say it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on how you hold the shell. It's
a hologram,
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Hologram.
It is three-dimensional.
Yes.
And so I have a curly maple neck with little walnut and other woods in the middle just for sandwiching effect. And either maple or mahogany or traditional neck woods because they're very stiff, very stable.
Right, because over the time, the pressure of the string pulling on it.
Exactly. Basically, guitars are built at the point where they want to implode. They want to collapse on themselves. So we have truss rods in it. I have carbon fiber strips
mm-hmm.
to help prevent that. Because as it net goes like that, the strings are going to go higher and higher and higher until the instrument's unplayable.
Right. Mm-hmm. I see you've got a logo at the top.
I have my logo at the top of the instrument that was designed by one of Ryo's graphic design students many years ago. Benji Davis, the art professor, assigned it to his class on designing me a logo for Acorn House Workshop.
Okay. Is that supposed to be just an acorn or
that is
for a
just,
C?
That is just an acorn.
Okay.
And this was the best design that I selected from what they submitted, gave the winner some cash for it, and that's been my logo ever since.
That's very...
Looks classy.
Mm-hmm.
So, other than making something that looks cool, I guess it's supposed to work.
Yeah, as I said, you don't know if it sounds good until you're finished.
Okay.
Whether all the work is done or not. So
I
thought I'd sing you a little song, Pete Townsend song, called After the Fire. After the fire still burns. The heart grows older, but never ever learns. The memory's solder, and the soul always yearns. After the fire, the fire still burns. I heard a voice asking, what happens after the fire? And then the sound of a breaking window.
and the scream of a tire, and the sound of a distant gun, and the cry of a hungry child. The night is hot, and nothing's gonna stop the dangling wild. After the fire still burns, the heart grows older, but never other love. The memories smolder, so glowing June. After the fire still burns. I saw my doing in black and white. There ain't no color in my memory. He rode his brother's old collie across the TV while I was stopping at Tom Jellowy. Now I'm cycling through my videotape, and I'm crying and I'm choking. Gotta stop drinking. I gotta stop drinking. I gotta stop smoking. Cause after the fire still burns. The heart grows older, but never ever learns. The memories smolder, the soul always yearns. After the fire still burns. Raging through the pain, blackening with promises, with tears and the pain. The fire still burns, till the wind begins to turn, and it all begins again. After the fire still burns. After the fire still burns. The heart grows older, but never ever burns. The memories smolder, the soul always yearns. After the fire. The fire still burns.
I think it works pretty well.
Yay! That was beautiful.
All right, so I think we have about a minute left, and so let's try out your... not ukulele.
Ukulele.
Ukulele. Ukulele. So this is made of Hawaiian koa, which is a traditional ukulele wood and came from Hawaii.
Now, soft or?
It is a hardwood.
Okay.
And so this is a George Harrison song. George Harrison was a great proponent of the ukulele. Had dozens of them in his car trunk, would give them to whoever he met with. Everyone has choice when to learn not to raise their voices. It's you that decides which way. While feeling that a love's not your concern, it's you that decides. No one around you